Welcome to Creative Block. We're your hosts, V.
And Carl. We interview people in creative industries about their life, work, hobbies, while we doodle jam.
We ask people on social medias. We're everywhere now. We're on Patreon. We're on Discord. We're on Threads, YouTube, all of it. If they had specific topics they wanted us to discuss, as well as some drawing prompts.
And today with us, we have Jessica Baritsky.
Hi!
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. It's good to hang out.
Thanks for making the time and coming on. That's really fun. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's going to be a fun little time drawing together and hanging out and talking industry.
And talking industry. You're going to reveal all the secrets.
Or just creative stuff. All of the above. We don't have to talk about work if we don't want to. Whatever you guys want to.
You've worked in the industry for a little bit. Like, when did you start working in animation?
Yeah, so I started back in 2003, I graduated, and then, yeah, so Spunko was hiring. They were looking for animators. My first gig was actually Pencil on Paper, which was, you know, it's crazy to say that out loud because it makes me sound like I should be, like, 80. But
so
it was
cool,
one
though.
Of the last
I feel
jobs
like starting on paper, you know.
Yeah, it was one of the last jobs at like around. I mean, I did one other job after that that was on paper, but it was like very rare at that time because it was they're phasing it out. But it was like I was just doing actual like pose to pose animation for the new Ren and Stimpy. And then after that I also did I did layout on another Canadian type show called Benjamin Bear, and it was very sweet. It was just like teddy bears, and I had to pose out those. And that was the first time I did like a piecework job. So I don't remember the pay because it was so long ago. But I remember being very excited that I could draw pretty quick these bears because I could like hand in these folders and get money, and it was very
nice.
Exciting. But it was cool, you know, like working with physical materials is really nice because I don't do it anymore. And I just did a piece for Riker's school and just like something for their door for a readathon. And, you know, when you're working with these pens and paints, it's just like, it's so fun. It's, you're getting messy and you feel it. And I told myself, like, I got to do this more because I sit at a computer all day. I do so much. Like I don't do tons of drawing anymore because I am supervising directing, so it's not like I draw all day, but when I do draw it is all digital, and there's something to be said about going back to that paper and pencil, and it just feels really good.
I feel like drawing on paper is like I don't know how to describe it, but it I just am so much more creative when I'm on paper for some reason.
Tactile, I always say. And I remember, like, you also happen to be very good at it. I don't know. For some artists, I feel like if they were brought up in one way or the other, they're more comfortable. But since that was sort of your foundation, I remember just, like, all the drawings on the table in the Benicula trailer were just really good. Just, like, you know, with the
I drew a lot there.
You would apply construction, and it just, like, was little pieces in the... Yeah, it's sort of, like, it's neat to, like, be able to hold it. And to, like, I don't know, you sort of, like, understand the medium in this other dimension that I feel, like, helps inform the volume that I always see, like, in your stuff. I think it just, yeah, like, not that just drawing physically in itself is the magic Dumbo's feather or whatever, but something in the sauce there, because, like, I don't know, I feel like you have a quality that looks like it could be drawn on paper, you know, like,
which that's cool. I like that. I mean, you never know what you're doing, you know, so that's interesting to hear.
Do you so when you went to school, did you study for specifically like animation as like the
yeah,
when I mean animation, yeah. I mean kind of like the actual animating, not
I was so excited to get out of high school that I started taking college programs at night for pre-animation. So I felt like at that time I had the drawing, like I was able to get into the course, but I just had to learn a couple animation techniques and stuff, because I had no, I mean, I was like 17 years old, so I had no idea on like how to animate volumes, timing, all that stuff. So that's what I started to learn in pre-animation, and I had to learn how to life draw a bit. So I did like, I think, a few months of that. And then when I was, yeah, I just went right into a traditional, it was only a 2-year program at that time, 2 years, studied traditional animation. We learned all the basics, all on paper. We had an animation class. There was a layout class. There was a storyboard class. There was a drama class.
The whole package.
It was cool. The whole package. And then, did I say life drawing? Yeah, we did life drawing too. My favorite classes, I loved storyboarding. Oh, character design, obviously. I love character design. I love all parts of animation. I think that's why I like directing, because even though you're not doing the actual work as much, you still really get to like be part of the discussion and the figuring out with the artist, and then you get to like go over after and kind of make it exactly how you want it to work in the episode. So I think that's why I like directing, but I definitely miss drawing everything from scratch, and just when your day is just like, oh, I get to draw 10 characters today and figure out, you know, their outfits and their size proportions. Like, those days are very different than what I do now, which is a little bit more.
It's actually, yeah, it's really interesting. Let's kind of get into that in terms of like, because what's really cool about what you just talked about is that you started by animating and then you did layout. So you've kind of been through all the different positions, right?
I did like I don't want to say traditional route, but kind of the old school route where like you started as an animator and then you did like character design and then you did storyboarding. Then you, like, I did that route one by one by one by one. And I'm so glad I got to do it that way, because I think it really made me understand roles very well. So when I'm working with other artists, it's like very helpful. Because I couldn't imagine directing, but I never storyboarded. That would like be very strange to me. But I hear some people do that, and I'm really? Like, wow.
You mean directing as in which kind of director? Because I feel like if you're directing in TV, you have to have done some boards, right?
I don't know. I feel like I've heard of people just all of a sudden like directing, and they, I forget what show it was, but I remember being kind of blown away.
That's
at
so
that.
Interesting. I mean, that's so interesting, because you're.
Or, like, some people run a show, like, right out of school.
That's true, yeah.
Like they'll
so, yeah.
I mean, they are supported by a team, but at that same time, it's, like, that's an amazing experience to get. But at the same time, it's, like, you don't know what the hell's going on or how it
that's
works.
So, yeah.
It'd be very
I'd like to think that they lack certain insights that probably make it ultimately much more, like, difficult, if not for them, for a lot of other people, for those, unless they're a quick learner. I mean, it just makes sense that, yeah, like if you're going to be supervising or directing, like to understand the pipeline, like seems imperative, but yeah, I don't know. I guess like everyone has like a different path or whatever. And I guess like they learn quickly.
Yeah. And everyone has such. Yeah. And that being said, like everyone also has very different skill sets, right? Like some people are just like really good at character design, but they don't really even have an interest in boarding or something. Yeah. So, you know, everyone brings like such a different tool set to the table in this industry, I find, which makes it good, because then we all get different jobs and lend our different talents on the crew.
The fact that it happens to be that you are good at all of them, like, I feel like makes you, you know, heavy hitter when it comes to, you know, and so it's, I'm glad.
Well, it's nice when you need work, because you can say, hey, I'm available for everything.
That's actually a really interesting thing to bring up, because I feel like a question that we often get is, can I do everything? Or, you know, because I feel like sometimes something that we hear is like, oh, well, recruiters like to put you in a little box, or like they like to know the one skill you do best so that they know what to call you for. And how do you kind of navigate that?
You know, I think like if you're young, you're getting into the industry, I think, you know, what we were taught too, and I think it is a really smart route, is, you know, focus on what, because everyone has their superpower. So like mine was, I believe, character design. So that's what I led with as a young person breaking in. I was like, character design all the way. And I got the animation job I wanted the character design job. I didn't get it, or the storyboarding job, but they hired me to be animator. But, you know, I think it is good to just get in with, like, but everyone gets in so differently. So I'm going to take back what I said. But I think that, yeah, if you're younger, like, focus on something, because you have to get really good at one thing to get a initial job in the industry. Because we all know when we get on a show, you're not, like, I'm not allowed to edit. I can't even touch an editor's computer. Like, that's, like, against the, what is it?
Oh, the tag? The agreement? Union. Oh, the...
Yeah, there's, like, rules against that. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, just let me get in there and do it. And they're like, no. You know, so, like, you have to understand that when you get on a show, you will have a very, you will just be, like, pigeonholed into one job. And that's great. So maybe focus on something at the beginning. But then when you're on the show, start expanding and, like, talking to the crew and talk to your directors. Tell them you have interest in storyboarding. Because that's usually how I see people evolve. It's just through friendships and talking and figuring out, like, and showing, like, through being on the crew, you know, what they can do. Or if you're a writer or you want to be a writer and you just got on a show doing, like character design, you talk to the writers and you write a spec script and you show them, like, you know, what you can do. And usually that's how you kind of evolve. And then friends, you know, they share their tips, what they do. And it's a good way to grow once you're in. But yeah, definitely, like, as we were saying, hone in on one thing at the beginning. I think that's really smart.
That's great to hear, because I feel like that can be something that can be, like, really, you know, like, looking for the word, petrifying, you know, to, like, look for just a single skill that's gonna be your selling point. So knowing that,
yeah,
not,
I think
your whole career just one skill, like, you have,
yeah, no, it can totally evolve. Just go with what comes natural. Everyone knows, like my layouts didn't come naturally. Drawing backgrounds did not come naturally to me. It was
oh, that's thing. Let's talk so, about, like, that a little bit, because that's something I hear a lot from people. They're like, I want to do storyboards, but I don't know how to draw backgrounds. So how did you kind of
well, you gotta kind of know how to do it, but you don't have to know how to do it to the degree of, like, perfection. You gotta know basic perspective, because, mm-hmm. you know, that's a big part of storyboarding. But you don't have to be, like, a background artist before you become a storyboard artist. But you better be able to draw in perspective and get your, you know, characters on a floor grid. And, you know, and everyone's got to be able to tell what kind of angle they're looking at, because otherwise we're in trouble. But, you know, storyboarding, I think, is something, too, that shouldn't necessarily be an entrance position, because it you do have to understand acting, you have to understand layout, you have to understand structure, perspective. That's something you build off of a bit. So if you're, like, a character designer for a bit or a layout artist, you have time to sort of focus in on that first. And then when you're a board artist, you kind of have to bring all your tools to that one job. I mean, when I think of storyboarding, I'm like, that's a director. You're basically a director. You're doing it all. You're laying it all out. And then your director will go over and make it what they want, or they edit it and make it work timing wise. But when you're sitting and boarding, you're the director at that moment. You're doing the biggest heavy lifting.
I get that.
Show.
And I find, like, if you're doing it correctly, like, you absorb all of that other stuff. Like, I never did backgrounds or considered myself a background person, but then you kind of, like, have to learn that by proxy and well, if you want to be competent as a board artist. And then, you know, using the perspective to our, I like use and abuse the warp function and treat that as perspective and stuff. And then now, like, I guess, like, it comes with the pencil mileage along with all the other stuff, you know?
But yeah.
I think, yeah. That's so true what you're also saying, like, Jess, like, how you're, like, a director when you're a board artist. And I feel like something that's, like, kind of, this is my segment. This is my soapbox moment when I tell everybody storyboarding is really hard.
Well, I'll be honest. I've never been more tired at the end of the day than when I'm storyboarding. Mm-hmm. Like, that just, like, in the best kind of way, just mentally, creatively exhausted.
Especially if it's board driven, right? Because then it's like...
Well, then you're the writer too.
Have you done that?
And, you know, I feel so bad on Benicula, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. That was my first show. And I was, like, board driven because I like wacky cartoons. And then, like,
people were, like, done.
Loved it. Like, for me, that was...
You, and that was your first job, Carl. So you were like so fresh-eyed, bushy-tailed, like you were ready to go. Like your tail was wagging.
I had something to prove, so you were, I guess. Yeah.
And yeah, and I would have been exactly like you because I was the same way when I did like let's say the Merry Melodies back in 2000 and like I don't know when I did this 2010, 11, 12 because I wanted to prove, you know, and when you want to prove something, you don't even care. Like, you're not even thinking about the hours spent. You're just in there making it gorgeous. And I know you had so much fun and your boards were
Well, thank you. I mean, I just watched like the one that you did and I was like, oh, that's the bar, like the pilot with the key and the, you know, Chester and all that. And then I just had that playing and I kept returning to that as like the standard. And I just wanted to, like, have fun. And I appreciated the freedom, too. And then a bunch of shows after that, I was sort of like, oh, we're not allowed to write the episodes? But we know it.
I know. You had a very different experience, the first show experience, I think.
But
and it was fun, too, because we were, like, in the back in a trailer. So it just felt like a little clubhouse.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the first show Warner Brothers did that wasn't a direct reboot of a original series. So it was the first time they took a chance at like, okay, we're just going to throw money at this and develop this book that was called Panicula.
Yeah.
So they're like, let's just do it and see what happens. So we were kind of lucky to be part of that experiment, I think. And we did good. I mean, we got three seasons, so.
That's right. You know. Like it kept going like I remember there was like a lull and I had to like go to a couple different shows and then I was like completely burnt out. And that's why I wasn't there for the other times. But part of me kind of kicks myself that I didn't prioritize my time in such a way where I should have got, because I was, yeah, just I would have wanted to, because I tell people to this day that first season of Panicula is still one of my favorite experiences that I've had in TV.
That's awesome. I'm so glad
still
to hear that.
That carrot.
I feel like there was.
Yeah.
Oh no, I get that because there are some shows where that I run to, like Panicula was one of them, where like I still like I'm trying to like find that feeling again, you know, and they'll happen again. It's just I think. With Panicula, it was so exciting because it was just so, it was my baby. It was just like in my style. I designed all the characters. I did the intro, I did the pilot, and it was just sort of like Sam Register being like, yeah, that looks good. Let's keep moving forward.
Oh, what a time.
It was just, it was like a Wild West and there was like no one at Warner Brothers at that time. I just kind of got in at a good moment.
How did you get that opportunity? What led up to that opportunity for you to... Was it a development deal?
That was through Looney Tunes because I was in Canada. I was working at an advertising gaming agency at that time doing like, you know, fun game ideas for macaroni and cheese, like craft, you know, and you know, this macaroni dinosaur. Like it was really cool. And we designed like Happy Meals and digital toys for Happy Meals. It was just all over the place. But then like when I got this offer to redesign the Looney Tunes back in 2008. It was off of a short film I had created that a producer named Tony Cervone saw at Warner Brothers. He was like, oh my gosh, I really enjoy your style and your aesthetic. What would it look like if you drew Bugs Bunny? And I was like, I'll tell you what it looks like. And I did it. And like that night, I was so excited. And I got the job right away. So I was working remotely doing the Looney Tune design stuff for this new series they were making called the Looney Tune Show. At that time, it was called Laugh Riot. And I just sort of worked remotely for them. And I kind of proved through my design work and through some, you know, I would send notes about the designs and what I thought would be helpful. And then I just started cleaning up Tony's boards, the producer's boards for the Merry Melodies. And then he was like, oh, you can board too. And I was like, yes, I can. And then from there, I evolved up to directing all the Merry Melodies. And then I finally moved to LA after that. So I proved myself on the Looney Tunes show, which then made them say, okay, she can handle like all parts of production. Let's see what she does with Panicula. That's kind of how that
so cool
happened.
Because that means that you managed to not only like, in terms of like Yeah, the progression is like so crazy. Like you're kind of like shot like straight up in terms of like when going on a show in the US, because I don't know how the visa process was like for you.
They gave me an O1 at that time.
Okay. Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah, because you're from France, right?
Yes. I
So
also got the O1,
you got the O1.
but I had to plead. I had to be like, they tried to get me the H1B and I was like, please, let's do the O1. It's more stable. There's more
Yeah, and they
chances.
did. And who sponsored you? Who was the first company that sponsored you?
Nickelodeon.
Oh, it was Nickelodeon. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so
I
cool that
finally.
WB sponsored you.
Yeah, no, they were very awesome for doing that. And I finally got my green card, I think, like 2.5 years ago.
Really? Oh my gosh, that's so
Oh,
funny
it took
because
that long? Dang.
did
Yeah.
you? Because I feel like for me, like after 3 years, I was counting down the years. I was like, 3 years, I got a lawyer. And I got my green card. And
Yeah,
I
I was just very like, I always knew they'd renew it. I don't know. I was just kind of like blasé about it. I didn't think about it much. And then I realized like, oh wait, I'm so tied to one studio. I
Yeah.
need a green card. I want to do other work. And that's kind of what made me get it finally. But
Oh, nice.
it took like 2 years to get that thing too, because the process also was through
It's
the
so long.
pandemic. Yeah.
Oh, and it was during the pandemic too.
Yeah,
Oh my
so that
God.
made it move a bit slower, as you can
Oh
imagine.
my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so stressful. Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. Yeah, I got mine right at the beginning. I mean, during the pandemic, it was like early. It was like 2020. I got in 2020. That's so crazy. But it's so cool to hear that like you got the visa and then you worked on the Looney Tunes show and they're like, we love what you do and we want to. So did they approach you? Were they like, we want to see your take on this book, or were you the one to be like,
Yeah,
hey, here's this
Sam
book?
Register literally, I remember he put the book on my desk one day and he's like, "What do you think of this book?" And
Oh.
I was like, "I remember that book from the library." And I wasn't a big reader as a child, but I remember like seeing that book. It's funny, I remember seeing that book and thinking, if I read books, I'd read it. And
And you never did.
Sam Register, he's really like, I think he's really good at what he does, and I think he's a really, really great executive. And he just sort of like knew what my specialty was I like creepy, I like cute. And Carl, you're kind of like the same as me. Like we kind of teeter on that edge of adorable psychotic, like in our drawings, like they're very cute and fun, but everything is like a little bit off.
There's something
And
there, yeah.
yeah, there's like, and I love playing in that realm. And he saw that and he was like, I would love to see your take on this Benicula, like this whole concept. What would he look like? And that night I drew a few versions of what I would think of him looking like and his energy. And he was like, okay, cool, let's start developing the show. Like it literally happened so naturally and so quick. And then the next thing I knew, like we were like, storyboarding an episode. Well, the pilot.
The monkey paw, was that, or was it the,
No,
there was a monkey in it, right? Was that the pilot?
that's Mumkey. Remember
Okay,
Mumkey?
monkey.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
don't. What was the? I think the first one was Walking Squished. I think that was the first one, the
Oh,
zombie thing.
yeah,
And
that's
I love
right.
this concept because I love horror movies and I love all of like spooky stuff. So for me, it was like I was just in my heaven of, genre of drawing stuff. Cute
Yeah.
ghosts. It was just like it's like we were always making a Halloween episode, which is fun.
I
That's
took
so
to it
cool.
so quickly. I was like, it was very much my, because I was aware of you for a while, and I remember seeing your short, The Good Bunny with like the bad teeth or whatever. And like when I was in college, and even like some of your earlier stuff or whatever. So I was just like nerding out, and like it happened to be like, because I feel like anytime I ever draw something cute, there is sort of this like, I don't know, undercurrent of potentially crazy like
Yeah.
underneath
Oh,
it. And
yeah. You have that element to your work for sure.
yeah.
But that's why you were, I think that's why you were such a great fit on our show. Like, because you got it. You understood the characters and like the vibe of it.
It
So
was
you
a
had a lot of fun.
blast. It was. I remember
Yeah.
laughing so hard, and it just like also because we were like you know, conceiving like the characters and the narrative and like, right, you know, it was very, it felt very like, yeah, like involved. I don't know, like like we really were drawing with our heart, I guess.
Yeah.
And everything was being informed by your personal like tastes and sensibilities, which were aligned with what mine were. So it was like a really, it was a fun time. I really like.
And we didn't really have a lot of executives. We had to like pitch to Jay Bastion basically, oh, yeah. And it was done.
Yeah, that's so, right.
Oh, yeah, that was great. And I mean, he was really easy to work with, and you know, they always had good notes. I never was like, what? I don't understand.
Because he'd be laughing too, you know, and it was just like, oh, it was a good time. That little trailer or whatever. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it the trailer? Was it the same trailer that we were in Thundercats, or was it a different one?
Oh my gosh. No, so well, funny. It wasn't the same, but it was like in that neighborhood.
Yeah. On the ranch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. R.I.P. the ranch.
Oh man, I drove by today. Have you seen it? Just it's completely leveled. They're like, it's just gutted.
Oh my god, that makes me sad. I didn't even know that.
I know that whole fake neighborhood and all that stuff. Yeah, I did see the Panicula trailers are still there because they hug the weird wall that no one cares about.
Oh, weird.
So they're
okay.
Still up, but man, the CW building and all that stuff. Like, the main one where the Mike Tyson statue, it's all completely bulldozed into rubble. They're like, I don't know, building a mall or something.
The Mike Tyson show, I forgot about that one. That was an interesting one. That one was in development, like, when we were doing Benicula. And, I mean, I got to meet Mike Tyson through that. So what a gift. What a gift. I met him at Comic-Con.
Oh, my God.
That year. Yeah.
Wow. That now the whole podcast is just about you meeting Mike Tyson. Forget it.
Well, it was a brief moment. You know, he just kind of like, we had like a three word exchange and you know.
Are you a are you like a fan? Like, are you, were you?
No,
like,
I just find him like, you know, he's an interesting character. He's like such a, you know, piece of popular culture, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's so funny. So I kind of want to ask you a little bit more about, so you were in development on Benicula. So Sam shows you the book. You're like, looks great. You read it, you're like, draw some designs, and then kind of what are steps like, were you just kind of like, how casual was it versus like how formal was it? Was it like, were you just kind of like swinging by like Sam's office like, look at my drawings, or was it
kind of was really like, there wasn't a lot of people working. Like, I felt like I was there at a very unique time that I'm happy about because it was so casual. Yeah, like I would knock on Sam's door and go in and show him drawings sometimes. I mean, most of the times we like made time to meet up, but I could do that. It wasn't strange at all.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it was very relaxed at that time because there just wasn't really much going on. And then I felt like when I left was when I left after Wabbit, the show Wabbit, that I think evolved into the Looney Tunes.
The new Looney Tunes. That's what it was when I did my time on Wabbit. Like, even though on paper it was Wabbit, and then it was called New Looney Tunes. Different from Looney Tunes cartoons, which was
the most recent
version that's like on, but there's been a lot of Looney Tunes, I guess.
And I find like what frustrated me the most about the Looney Tunes is I was always asked like, you gotta make them look different. They gotta be like a modern edge. So I was like, okay. So I just, you know, did a new design. And then like when I left, they did like the Bob Clampett basically, like and I was like, damn it, that's what I wanted to work on. But I had to be in like, I felt like I was in the exploratory phase of Warner Brothers trying to figure out like, how can we reinvent them? And they needed to go through step A, B, and C to finally get to, let's just make these cartoons that are super fun and look like Bob Clampett. And that's kind of like my favorite director at Looney Tunes that ever was, and the style and the look. So then I was like at Warner, like Nickelodeon, like watching from the window them do that, and I'm like, oh, curses, I wanted to be on that show.
That's so funny that you mentioned Clampett as being your favorite director, because I feel like myself included, and like a lot of animation people are like, Chuck Jones, right?
I mean, yeah, and I love Chuck Jones. I think, but there's something strange and exciting about the Clampett cartoons that sorry, what's his name? I'm blanking. The guy we just talked about.
Chuck Jones.
His cartoons are just so beautiful, so formulated. And everything moves like from pose to pose, and it's very like there's a bit of psychoticness with Bob Clampett cartoons, and I just like it because it feels free. It feels a little bit less structured.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So Clampett is a little bit more like
experimental,
and Chuck Jones is very tight. It's very tight. Like,
and I appreciate both for those reasons, but if I had to like choose, like if I had to, let's say, work on a new production of Looney Tunes, like what style do you want to work in, I would be like definitely a Bob Clampett style, because I just find that he looks like Bugs Bunny's cuter, and I just like
got that like wrapped around like
he seems like more interesting and mischievous in those ones.
Yeah, he's a little bit more, they're like Chuck Jones make them a little bit more
there's a formula
there, but also they're like clever and a little bit like you know, like the style I've been trying to describe kind
they're
of
refined, they're more refined in a way than the Bob Clampett cartoons. They're
yeah, that's fun. True. Yeah.
But there is something, I mean, there's something to appreciate about all the directors, but those are definitely my two favorite because they're just, it's very solid cartoons. I mean, cartoon directors.
That's so fun. Yeah. When I was working on I don't know if it's canceled, or if they're still trying to ship it around, but
what?
I was working on the Bye Bye Bunny direct to streaming.
And... Oh, I was on that too.
You were?
Really? Yeah, brought in, but very like more like a consultant. They wanted me to go over all of the designs and just like make notes and because they had a bunch of designs, and it was funny because it's like I'm like, oh wow, this just looks like right out of. Chuck Jones, like this is just a Chuck Jones drawing.
You're like, God damn it! Sorry. Oh no! There it is, the first one.
I was like, why didn't we just like print out a model sheet of Chuck Jones? I guess they didn't really have one, but they were working very hard to have like a new Chuck Jones version, and that's where I came on just to sort of do a little bit of work on Porky, Bugs, Daffy. It was fun, and then it was sad to hear that they came.
What were
you doing on it, V?
Boards, storyboards.
Oh, fun!
And it was so hard because I feel like, I mean, drawing in the Looney Tunes style. So I'm looking at, for anybody who's listening on Spotify, check out the Jam Board on YouTube, because Carl and Jess are absolutely amazing at drawing the Looney Tunes. And for me,
we're drawing a lot of bunnies.
Hardest thing to draw ever. The Looney Tunes style is so hard for me. Like, I'm kind of like the school of kind of more like modern Cartoon Network, I guess. So like,
it's
very different. It's a lot of fun, but their drawings are amazing. It's really fun that, being on the Chuck Jones style type, I was just, he's one of my faves. So when I'm like, I was just like, I can't do it. He's too good. You know what I mean? It's so intimidating. And I was like, I can't, I don't have the skills. I thought I was a good artist and I'm not, I'm just a fraud. Have you ever had any show that you worked on that you were like, oh God, this is hard?
Yeah. Like my first job was incredibly hard because everything I did was wrong. It was on Ren and Stimpy, you know, because I was working with John Crisfalusi and everything that any artist did was just not right because it had to be exactly what was in his head. So it wasn't necessarily like anything I was doing in particular. I just could not think about, I couldn't draw what he wanted. And that was frustrating. And then after that job, every other job I did, I remember they would like, I would hand in my folder and then it would be like approved. And I was like, what? You mean there's no 10 rounds of notes and then it's still not done? They're like, no, it's done. I was like, oh my God, life is going to be so much easier. But that job was tricky. I found most of my jobs, I've been hired on things that really suit my talent. So I've never been intimidated to the point where I'm like, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. But I've had definite scary times where it's a new role. Like the first time I started directing for reals on like Looney Tunes, I was like, oh, do they like know that I don't know what I'm doing? You know, I had that imposter syndrome a bit. Like, Oh, okay. But you know, you just go with your gut. At the end of the day, it's all just like what you think is best, and you just kind of go with it and see what works. So I found there were like parts of productions that were like kind of scary and intimidating. And then working on, it's funny because you mentioned like the last time you saw me was probably Thundercats, and that job was very hard because I was coming off Inicula, that was my show, my sensibilities, and I went on to Thundercats, and Victor Courtwright has a totally different brain than me, and I love it, and I love his thinking and the way he draws and his jokes and his humor. But I went on to that, and I was like, I don't speak this language yet. And I was, and they brought me on to direct, and everyone else was like boarding, and I felt so uncomfortable because I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Everyone else really knows what they're doing, and I'm directing. Like, I remember just feeling like super, like, I had a lot of anxiety at that time about it because I just didn't really. And then also the timeline was insane. They were like, they gave me the boards and a recording of Victor reading the script,
Yeah.
and they said, "Can you have this edited by tomorrow?" And I
Yeah.
was like, "What?
Yeah, that was
That is
crazy.
crazy. I don't
That
know
was
how
crazy.
the
'Cause
Thundercats people did. Like, I would, and it was like animated too. Like,
I was mad. I was like, "What are you talking about?" Like,
how dare you,
and then
sir?
I kind of did it. Like, I just sort of did it as quick as I could, and I handed it in. And I was like, "Have fun." I don't know what to say, but I was really intimidated because I just didn't get it because I just didn't know that style. I'd never been on any of his shows. Well, that was his first show, I think.
That's his
So,
first show, but
yeah.
he, yeah, I don't know. It is kind of a it. Yeah. It was like a. It was like these kind of. It's working on Thundercats is kind of like one of these kind of shows where it's kind of like sink or swim kind of type of thing where it's like you
Yeah.
either get it or you
You
don't.
don't,
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah, yeah. And it's kind of like I've never experienced that before moving to the US. I feel like in France, people will be like, "The show is like the show, the show, the show, the show." Like I literally worked on.
Yeah.
No, I did a test for Dude, That's My Ghost, and they were like, "Dude, That's My Ghost is like Kick Buttowski and this other show and this other show. This is what we're doing." And so you have like a lot of references and you can watch a ton of things.
Yeah.
But I feel like here in the US, you have more people that are like, "No, we're doing something completely new and different." And it's just, and it's my creator stamp on it, which is both really
Yeah.
exciting and really
Yeah.
scary too.
Yeah, because it takes a while, like at least a few episodes to get the sensibility if you're working on it. Because you're going to pitch all these ideas, and the creator's going to go, no. And it's not that your ideas suck. You have to remind yourself. It's not that they suck. This just isn't my show and my vision, you know? And you'll hopefully everyone will get their chance to have that. But when you're on someone else's show, you just kind of have to let them lead you and go, yeah, how would I have known? How would I have known what you wanted?
It's really
Yeah.
interesting that you talk about that because you talk from like you were running Bunnicula, right? You
Yeah.
were so you're talking about going from being a showrunner and making all the decisions
Yeah.
to being under somebody else and like trying to figure them out. And like so you
Yeah.
just said that it was kind of like you were kind of anxious and stuff, but like how do
Yeah.
you like more specifically, I guess, emotionally deal with like, "Oh, well, now I'm not the boss anymore." Like what are kind of some ways that you were apprehending this like
Yeah.
new set n these new parameters?
Yeah, I think I remember like years ago seeing like Jorge. You know Jorge, I can never pronounce his last name.
Gutierrez?
Gutierrez. And I
Yeah.
remember he had done El Tigre, and then he was at Warner Brothers and he was doing animation. And I remember when I saw him, I probably offended him, but I didn't mean to. But I was like, wait, you're here animating? Like I was, but because I was pretty young. Like I was like 20, I don't know, 27, 28. And I was like, I didn't know that people like would run a show and then, you know, they would need to work and do other things. And he goes, yeah, I need a job. And I went, oh yeah, obviously. And I think like knowing that that is something you do, like there, you know, your ego, you know, you want to obviously like, you're like, oh, I want to make a show and then make a show and then make a show. And that's kind of rare to be honest, unless you're like, who, I don't know.
Like Gendy, I guess.
Yeah, like Gendy
Yeah.
or Who's the guy that made like Fairly Odd Parents? What was his name?
What's his face?
Oh. Yeah, like a Butch Hartman type, yeah. Where like, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's rare. Usually people, you know, they'll get a break, they'll make a show, and then after that show's done, they'll board or they'll, you know, start developing other things, whether they'll get off or not. Like, I mean, I'm always developing too. It's fun, you know, it's fun to always try to like get your next show, but the reality is you do need to work, right?
So yeah. Yep.
That
yep,
was, cause... I didn't really think about it in the sense of like, oh, poor me, now I'm not running a show. It was more like, okay, this is a new job. And it was a placeholder too. Like Warner Brothers was putting me on that to keep me so I could go on to either Animaniacs or, which didn't happen, but it was a placeholder. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way I see it too, it's like, it's always a new experience. But that being said, I remember feeling a moment of like, I don't understand. I don't get this. Will I always feel this way? I'm one of those people that thinks like a feeling will last forever, yeah. But it doesn't. So you get in your head and you start freaking out. And I remember I had really bad anxiety at that time. I would just lay at bed going, do I even know what I'm doing anymore? And it's like, yeah, you do. You just got on a show where you just don't know what the creator's doing. Like, chill out. You know, now I can look back and, like, see that. But I think as artists, it's really, we get insecure very quickly when we don't understand, like, what we're creating or yeah. how to do it. Because it's like, you know, it's like our skill is so much of who we are. And everything we do is like so much of who we are. So when you don't know what you're doing, it's kind of scary, I guess.
Adapting foreign sensibilities in order to yeah. play the
and
game.
And his was just so yeah. different than mine. So I was just like, it couldn't have been more black and white. I was more of a traditional animation cartoon, like, you know, that almost, I don't want to say Looney Tunes style, but Benicula was very grounded in like a traditional cartoon vibe, almost like a 90s feeling.
Yeah.
And then I went on to this super abstract, funny, quirky, you know, underground comic vibe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With a sudden gear shift, you know?
Yeah, I was just like, I don't understand. But that was probably one of my hardest shifts, I guess, like mental shifts, emotionally mental shifts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after that, I went on to Loud House at Nick. And that was like a little bit of a learning curve, but... Because Loud House is very comic oriented, very like, you know, sitcom, a kid with his family. And like, I understood that world. I was like, oh yeah, I know this. I know how this works. Like it just was a better fit for me where I could just explore and have fun. And I just understood the DNA of that show way more than
also,
Thundercats.
Like, I feel like Loud House, so it's probably changed from the time that I was on, from the time that you jumped on it, but
yeah,
I remember
end of season four,
yeah, because I left around the beginning of season three, and when I started at the very beginning, because at the time Chris Savino was running the show, he's the creator, and he was pretty straightforward with his references because he ran a lot of shows prior to that.
I didn't know he ran other shows prior to that. That's cool.
Yeah,
I thought that was his first one.
That was the first one he created, but he ran some seasons of Kick Buttowski. He ran some seasons of Dexter's Lab. He ran a bunch of shows. So he came kind of like later on those shows. So he kind of had like he came in with a lot of experience. And I think for a lot of board artists that was kind of comfortable in a way, in a sense that it's like, okay, I see what you're trying to do. It was very kind of like early Cartoon Network, I guess. Like, we had the Foster's House for Imaginary Friends.
Yep.
Storyboard Guide as like a... reference. It was like, okay, this is how you board the show.
That was the look and vibe of it. Yeah, it's too bad that he was like not so great as a human, apparently, from what I heard. Because like I had a lot of friends tell me he was the best showrunner they've ever worked with. Like he just knew exactly what he wanted. I had a lot of people tell me that. And then when they found out he wasn't such a great person in the sense of, you know, doing terrible things to people, he you know, they were so disappointed because they were like, oh my god, he was like so like he taught a lot of people a lot, I think, and they really admired how he did the show.
Honestly, I
I
mean,
don't
I
know.
haven't.
What was your experience? I didn't work with him ever. This is just what I heard.
No. I mean, I've never really talked about it on the podcast. I guess this is like, a big bombshell or whatever. No, but it, no, but no, no. It's not really a bombshell, but it's just like a long story short. That's true. What you just said is very true, and
he was really good at what he did.
Yes,
you know?
He was an. It like that's the thing that's really hard, and for a lot of people on the crew was really, really, really hard. Was like you had to be able to have in your head coexist these two facets of the man, where it was like, all right, he's extremely talented and good and very good at show running, and then that other thing, and then you're like, gosh, that sucks.
Yeah.
It was very well ran. When I was on it, I was like, wow, this
and
is great.
Still is. They run that show so well. I love it. That's why I'm still on it. Like,
yeah.
I love the stories. The writing's great. I love the people. And there's just zero drama. The time scheduling is amazing. It's like such a no stress job. And I just, you know, I'm so comfortable with the characters. Like, for me to leave that show, I'll have to be like getting my own show to want to leave it. Like, I just, it's my home right now. And also, you know, the industry is a little bit like dried up like a desert right now a little bit. So I've had so many talented people like messaging me like, hey, what's going on at Nick? And that even gives me anxiety. Like, why don't you have a job? You should have a job, you know? Like, what if you don't have a job, that means I won't have a job.
That's the thing, but that's like, kind of like really tricky. It's interesting to hear your side of that story too, that like you see a lot of talented people messaging you, and I've been kind of like on that. I mean, not I don't know my talent, but what I'm saying is like for the past 6 months I was kind of unemployed, and you kind of are in that headspace where you're like, do I reach out, should I send emails to everybody, is this, am I gonna look like I'm like so hungry and people are going to be like really anxious because they can't give me anything, you know? And you know, it's kind of interesting.
I mean, it's always ebbs and flows, you know, this industry. So like we're about to like hit I think a big flow soon. That's my prediction.
That's what a lot of people say. Yeah,
history repeats. Yes, history. The golden era will begin.
It's
again.
True, because I feel like I even recognize like the pattern, and it's just different now because some of the, you know, situation. But this has happened before, at least in little doses. Like I was doing work from home and being unemployed for a year way before it was cool and chic to like talk about it on Twitter. I've gone through that like a couple times of my own volition already. So I don't know. I try to just like assume it'll be fine because you know, it always is. It's just a matter of
Have you guys ever taken commissions when you don't have work? I'm curious.
I've wanted. Okay, I've been holding.
Sometimes
back.
I feel like you could make pretty good money off commissions.
That's but okay.
Certain kinds of commissions, I'm sure, pay a lot of money. But
you need the community, though. I feel like if you have a community that's like centered around it, I feel like probably. Because I've been thinking, I don't know, I want to get somebody on the podcast who's like, who kind of makes a living from doing commissions.
Yeah.
Just because I do feel like if I open commissions, I would get like maybe like a little bit. Like maybe people would be like, oh, maybe there's like maybe like 50 fans that are like, ooh, I really want a drawing from you. And then,
it would dry up afterwards.
Yeah. Whereas if you're like kind of, if you're inside a community or in a fandom or something, like then they're not commissioning you for you, but they're commissioning you because you're in the fandom or like in the community, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'd commission you, Jess. That'd be awesome.
Like, I'd commission you, Carl.
Not if I don't.
How about
do
we just all commission each other?
No one makes
call
any
it a
money.
Night.
We all just work very, very hard and end up with. Jess.
It's that meme from like, you know, artist alleys where it's like it's the same $5 that everybody's giving each other to buy each other's like comic and
I
stuff.
Mean,
so funny.
Yeah, that would be great. We could do that.
What, so you're supervising directing on Loud House right now, right?
I am, yeah.
What would you say are the differences between what you were doing as a showrunner on Vernicula and what you're doing as a supervising director on Loud House? Because I'm guessing there's like a lot of similarities, right?
There are a lot of similarities. I mean, I took a lot of the skills I learned on Vernicula and brought them to Loud House. I guess I'm doing all the same things where like I come in at the beginning. Let me rephrase this. I Umbenicula, like we were, you know, at the very beginning coming up with concepts for episode ideas. Now I start my job with a meeting with the writers who are presenting me a fully written script. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the difference of Loud House. It's like I get a story and then I talk about, you know, concerns I have with the episode or things I like or things I want to maybe slightly change. But with Loud House, our writers are so good. They know what they're doing. I know what I'm doing, that I only have like maybe two or three little thoughts every board launch.
Mm.
And with Benicula, I was more involved like at the very, you know, birth of every episode. What is the concept? What's the flow? Like everything. So I was with the writers a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a little bit less of that when you supervise direct a show, because you're just there to sort of, at least at Nickelodeon, I feel like when you're supervising directing, you're there to just sort of guide it through every step of the way. Mm-hmm. We launch our board artists. They pitch me a rough. I make notes on that. But I guess on Benicula, I was only seeing like more of a clean board. I wasn't as, you know, each step of boarding as I am with Loud House. And then there's the editing, and, you know, I did the same thing in Benicula, and then I edit, and then, you know, then we go to the record and we do all that fun stuff. And then I don't do post anymore. I was doing post pre-pandemic, but then the show, my boss, Adam Henry, he's just been handling it. I think he just thinks it's easier for him to do it, which is cool. I mean, I liked post. I liked doing the you know, the sound effects and the mixes, but I don't miss it that much. Mm. You know, I'm more interested. My favorite part is like editing. I love editing. I love, you know, drawing, getting in the storyboard, mixing it up a bit. But yeah, no, it's very similar to being the creator. It's just, it's not necessarily as much as my original idea. It's more like I'm just enhancing the story. I'm enhancing the drawings. I'm making it shine every step of the way to try to get the best product we can out of each script. And yeah, it's just, I think it's just a little less of the concept that I'm part of. Because Loud House was obviously thing way before I came on, you know?
But it's
still really fun, because Loud House is, as much as the script's all figured out, they are always really keen to hear like our thoughts. Like, do you think this works? Oh, well, can we change it? Do you think this needs to be shot in this way? So I have like a lot of creative freedom on the show. And I think I just earned that trust over time too, because I've been on the show now since like 2018. But yeah,
wow,
it's been
that long. It's crazy. Yeah.
Because I like it. I would have left by now if I didn't like it.
That's the thing. It sounds like, and it is just like a super efficient vehicle. And even the way they're designed, when I drew them, like, they're very intuitive and lots of circles.
Yeah.
And it's good for how many there are. They're very, you can draw them relatively quickly. So, like, they're just like really good vehicles of expression. And I don't know, it's like, oh, that. Yeah, I don't know.
I think my biggest takeaway from working on that show too, one of the biggest takeaways is how to make an efficient show. And I think sometimes that'll save your ass if you get your own show. Because I wasn't about efficiency on Benicula. I was more about, like, you know, creating. It was like I was caught in between, like, trying to make my film, like, my personal short film out of this series. But at the end of the day, like, you can't do that. And I wasn't thinking smart about the number of backgrounds and the number of designs. I didn't care. I was like, you guys figure that out after production. Like, I was probably, in that sense, a really bad showrunner.
I mean,
but
to be fair, like, I probably should have been mindful of it, too.
We all should have been, but I didn't know better.
I was going, like, out of my way to, like, make things as complicated as possible. Because, like,
coming from feature, insane angles, like, all the time.
I know. I think about a few scenes where it's like there was no reason why I needed to have this weird three-quarter shot looking down.
Oh, I know.
It diluted the humor, frankly.
I can't even watch the show. If I watch it, I start to feel upset, because I'm like, why did this happen? Why did we allow that shot? What is this? What kind of crazy show is this? Because it didn't make, budget-wise, it made absolutely no sense. So the fact that we got three seasons, I don't know how that even happened, Carl.
Because it was awesome. It's a vampire bunny.
What's there not to love?
Because we gave it love. Europe loved it.
The Europeans loved it. It didn't really go far in America, though.
I think it's funny that you mentioned that, because it's true that, like being from France and
France loved it, I think, the most.
The shows that do well in France are very slapstick. It's very, France
Oh, this makes
loves
sense.
Looney Tunes. They
Oh,
like
okay.
Looney
This makes
Tunes.
sense then. Yeah. Because I remember Jay telling us our best ratings were from France, and I was like, oh, the French appreciate it. I thought maybe it's because it was like
fine art.
Like it looked different than an average. I don't know. I thought
no, I think it's
French.
Just like the humor. The humor in France, like the slapstick humor in France is very, very popular. And that's why kind of like in the Illumination movies, like the Minions and stuff, it's all slapstick. All of
yeah,
Illumination
you're right.
movies
yeah.
are all slapstick.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Mm-hmm. It's very popular. I don't know if it comes from farce or like, you know, like the biggest
a cultural thing. Yeah.
I think, yeah, I don't know. I wonder. It's just really funny because I think about that. And every time I come into a meeting and I talk to an exec and I'm like, I love slapstick. They're like, okay, good to know.
Well, my boyfriend's from Marseille. I'll have to ask him. I'll be like, you like the slapstick? Is this the thing? I never thought to ask.
Yeah, I wonder. We also have there's like a kind of puppet show in France that would be, you could potentially translate it as like the clown or like the goon, but it's basically kind of like, it's like puppets that it's kind of like commedia dell'arte in a way, in the sense that you have the same characters always.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so you have the same puppets, like it's like the puppets look very similar, but from a show to another, the design's like a little changed. And it's always, you know, like cops and robbers type of stories where it's like the audience is supposed to be like, look behind you, they're gonna get you kind of thing.
Okay, cute.
And that's
yeah.
very like pop, like in the popular culture of like France. And I wonder if it stems from that. I don't know.
No, it makes sense because our show did have like a lot of slapstick. It looked like a more traditional Looney Tunes type
yeah.
show. So it makes sense that they would be attracted to it 100%. Yeah.
Abused Chester the cat so much. Put him
Chester!
Through the ring.
Yeah.
I love that character and I loved being cruel to him.
Yeah, you definitely loved him. I feel like you loved his neuroticism.
Yeah.
There's also that too. I feel like French humor is a little bit more mean. Like American humor is a little bit more like sweet, you know? It's like
yeah.
a little bit more like optimistic or naive, like SpongeBob would
okay.
be a typical American type of humor, I would say. Whereas I don't mm-hmm. know if Bonicula had a little bit more of like
it
a
was
bite.
A little
it had
bite.
A little bit of bite. It did.
Yeah,
there was
yeah.
like, you know, there was a lot of like, you know, being mean to the dog because he was stupid. And...
At a certain point, I went out of my way to put down Harold the dog.
Yeah.
Not put him down. I would have if we
but
wrote
Chester
that into an
episode.
But Chester
was a little bit condescending to the dog. And yeah, like it was.
It just was funny.
But it was funny. They had a good dynamic.
Yeah. Or I just,
voiced,
like, you know, you'd
voiced
frame
by the very
kid.
Talented Sean Astin.
Oh,
he
for
brought
Chester.
A lot. Yeah,
yeah.
He brought
he
a
was,
lot to that character.
He had a blast. He gave it so much. That's why I was I could like the it was like he was not phoning it in at all. So that's the thing, like enough variables, people were like
he was invested
and
yeah.
bringing a lot. So it's like, well, I want to bring something to it too. And so like everyone kind of like I don't know, just like yes, anded themselves into a better version of what probably it had any business being, you know. I loved what I did, like, you know, for that show for a long time. I always would like revisit it and stuff, and just like, oh, that was so much fun. I just remember like laughing with Aaron and
Aaron,
Ian.
She know,
yeah, and all those. It just God, it was so funny. Like, just
you
like,
know where Aaron is?
I haven't talked to her in a really long time. Actually,
where is Aaron?
I know that she was like at Titmouse.
Okay.
I think she was at Netflix.
Yeah, she
I
was
know,
great.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I gotta touch base with Aaron. I think we every now and then we like our stories or our posts on Instagram, but that's about it.
Oh yeah,
know?
She had a big stunt at she was at Warner Brothers for a long time.
You
then,
know.
And then I don't know where she went.
Yeah.
Inquiry minds want to know.
Yeah, I feel like when Netflix opened up, like all these like animation jobs, like everybody like started like leaving the studios they had been like holed up in for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, Netflix. That was a fun flash in the pan. I mean, I was there for a little bit. It was
Yeah, I
nice,
know
though.
you were. I never got the Netflix experience. I was sort of like intrigued though, because like they were paying a lot of money and it seemed like it was an interesting place. Felt like the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
For a hot second, I mean, you know, there was some good stuff that came out of that whole initiative. I feel like we're talking about stuff with, it's, I don't want to like say like, you know, like overtly, because I know like we read the news and things are like looking a little discouraging with certain patterns that aren't new, but like it just like happens a lot at one place or whatever, and it's like, man, like I just. There is an ebb and flow, and when it ebbs hard, like right in the ribs, you know? And it's very, but then, like, there, it's a pattern, you know, patterns come back in different ways or whatever. And I've been saying this, I feel like this is the third time I've said this in the last 2 days, but it is, like, so easy for me to despair. Like, it's effort, I really, all, like, and especially with everything going on, all you have to do is think for, like, 2 seconds about something the wrong way or, like, you know, look at things. And it just can consume me. So it's like a conscious practice where I have to just sort of carry on and adapt and keep my head, you know, above water because instantly you can just like get overwhelmed with like just how dire things appear to be. But then like I've lived that, I've been that. We've all had periods, I'm sure, where we're like feeling hopeless or depressed or insecure, big time for me. But then what happens? Like, you know, like there's like a thing that you get your mojo back, or you know, things like you catch a little break here, or and it's never how you plan or expect it. Like, I'm sure you didn't anticipate that you'd be supervising the Loud House
No.
set 7 years ago or whatever, you know, and
No,
now like
no.
who could have predicted it? And but you've
No,
been
I
there,
know.
and you know, so it's like, yeah, you never know. So that's why it's important to like keep that in mind and be ready
Yeah.
for the good when it
Just
happens.
knowing that it's always going to change because each of these shows only lasts about 3 seasons. So, you know, we'll be
Yeah.
moving around quite a bit.
Yeah. I don't
I
know. Loud
hear.
House seems like it has a little bit more than that. There's the real Loud House, right?
There's the
That's.
live action. We're on season 8. Yeah, that I just somehow got linked onto a massive franchise that I didn't mean to get hooked onto.
Because you fit the bill and you're great, you
I
know?
fit the
So.
bill of a cartoon family in Michigan.
Well,
Just like,
Loud
yeah.
House is very, in a way, it's very cartoony, you
No, it
know,
is.
because
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of shows nowadays are very grounded, and there was like a streak of like very realistic type of animation. Like if you look at shows like Craig of the Creek or Clarence, or like they were like very grounded in reality, and like there's not that many show. Even Owl House is very grounded. But Loud House has all the slapstick and the stretch and squash
Yeah.
and all the like fun kind of
We have a
cartoony.
fine line with reality. Like, we'll have ghosts and things, and like magic can happen, but it is fairly grounded, to a degree. Yeah. We can play around a little bit.
We had like a lot of like great questions from a lot of different people, from Patreon, Instagram,
Oh,
Twitter.
for me?
For you.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Let's answer them.
Our producer Marco has been doing such a great job at like building the engagement, and they've been really on top of
Cool.
it. So let's see. From our patron Bialinsbear, how does it feel to give your own take on legendary characters like Snoopy,
Oh.
Looney Tunes that have had millions of rebrands and reruns and several people working with them? I think that's a really great question.
And they ask, how does it feel to do that? Oh, it's like so exciting because, like, as a kid, you know, when I was teaching myself how to draw, that's I would just draw like what was on my television. So to be an adult and be like, you can work with these characters that you know, learned how to draw from, and it's like I would be drawing them for fun in my room if I wasn't being paid to draw them.
Oh, that's so
So
great.
that's why I love like working with legacy characters, like the Looney Tunes, like I'm obsessed with, like I love the way they look, I love drawing them. It was really fun working on the Snoopy boards too. It's funny, though. I wasn't always a big Charlie Brown fan. I always liked Snoopy, but I never really liked Charlie Brown. I always thought he was a drag.
Yeah, same.
But then when... And I didn't appreciate... Like, I thought they looked cute, but I didn't appreciate the style that much. And I think it's because it was, like, oversaturated maybe when I was a kid. But I feel like when I was working on the boards and I started to actually understand the mechanics behind the design, I fell in love with the series. Like, the Snoopy show, I had such a blast working on. I loved drawing all of the characters. There's just, like, a thrill also when you're working on a legacy character because you're like, this is history in a way. Like, and I'm like, a big history buff with animation. I love old stuff. I love watching 30s and 40s cartoons. So when I get to, like, work on a character that to me is, like, really special to the industry, it's always an honor because you just feel like, wow, I'm part of, like, history. I get to, like, put my little bit of influence on this character. So that's a really – to me, that gives me a big high, I think, like no other. And Benicula, I know, wasn't, like, a legacy character, but there's also something fun about being able to work on something that is already really known, but then you get to put your spin on it. Like, it's just it's an honor, you know. It's like, wow, you're trusting me and you're allowing me to put my version of this. Like, this is something we do in our bedrooms alone as we draw these things, you know,
right,
late at night, little ideas. But then you're like, oh, I'm able to do this, and like, millions are gonna see it. Okay, let's do it. So I hope that answers that question.
Yeah, I love that answer because I love that you said the word honor and like the gratefulness and the excitement all together. Like, this is like a really exciting
answer. It's surreal. Yeah. It's pretty surreal because, like, you know, you never think, like, wow, little old me from Osgoode, Ontario, Canada, like, I get to be part of this legacy thing. Like, whoa, this is it just never feels real. But sometimes it is.
We had a question from Mallard, who's a patron. I think I'm just gonna like rephrase it just a little bit, but
okay.
Do you feel like your resume is relevant when you're like interviewing for a show? Like, do you feel like executives are kind of like, oh, you worked on this show, or like, oh, you worked on this show, kind of thing?
That's a hard question, sort of right now, because I haven't looked for a job in like almost I haven't really looked for a job. I know that sounds really weird, but I kind of fell into the Looney Tunes stuff and the WB stuff, and then like Nickelodeon was my friend Kyle was sort of opening the gate for me, and he knew what I was all about. He knew I would be a good fit. So I never had a moment where they're like, "Are you relevant for this style?" But I think it just depends on like what. Let's say I'll play devil's advocate or think about this differently. Like, let's say I'm applying for a directing job on like an adult comedy. It would be maybe a harder sell for someone to be like, yeah, let's try her on this totally different type of format, because my history is very child friendly. But that being said, I've actually been approached to work on a few adult stuff, and I turn it down because I don't really think that's my. I'm not excited about it. Like, what, I don't.
Was it like at WB? Because they have like a bunch of adult shows.
Not at WB. I got like, where was it from? There were a few like adult in development stuff. There was an Amazon one. Hmm. There was a WB. Yeah, no, there was a couple WB ones that were sort of like, would you be interested in? It's funny. I just don't. I would rather work on a fun cartoon show for 6 to 11.
Yeah.
So maybe that problem wouldn't happen to me in the way that my portfolio kind of reflects things that are what I'm good at working on. I don't know. Maybe I don't think I'm answering this question properly.
That's great. No, I really like that take on it, that you're like, you kind of found, and I was just kind of talking about that on a previous episode. I think it was the Howie Perry episode with Megan, where we were just kind of talking about like cartoon and what it means to draw and be in the style of a cartoony show, because there's not a million cartoony shows out there right now. And,
no.
Loud House is one of them, I would say. But
yeah,
I would say like it's kind of like a sub genre that, like, if you're in it, people can be like, you can do this.
Yeah, which is, I think, great, because then it, leaves lots of jobs available for people who specialize in that type of thing. We can all kind of find our spots that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Magic Bunny Art. I wonder who this is.
I know, who is that?
She asks, who's your favorite Looney Tune to draw?
My favorite Looney Tune? Oh
Yeah.
man. I gotta say, I guess Bugs Bunny. Easy
Uh-huh.
I don't know why. Like, I just love his feet. I like his shapes. He's just very pleasant to look at. I don't know. When I'm like, when you're on a phone doodling, like, I always draw rodents. Like, when I'm not thinking, I draw rodents.
Me too, for a
What is
long
that,
time.
Carl?
I don't
What
know, that's the
is
thing. Just you and I, like, there's a weird, like, that you
Yeah.
get it though. It's just comfortable. They're
Yeah,
kind of
they're
chubby, so you can
fluffy.
kind of bullshit the anatomy a little and not have to. The fluff does a lot of the work for you, and
Yeah, and
something
they're
of
edgy in a way because they
they're
move quick.
expressive because
Yeah.
they're kind of they have thumbs, kind of, so you can
Yeah.
kind of make them humanoid and they're still an animal, and
So I
like
tend to
it's.
draw those, and I think, like, remember, like, the Goofy Gophers, like, from Looney Tunes? I
Yeah.
like drawing, like, characters like that. Like, I always kind of draw weird versions between Bugs Bunny and, like, a Goofy Gopher. Like, it's always kind of rodent related. And I always draw rodents, like, with their mouths really open and big. Like, big
I
open,
love it.
teethy mouths, rodents. It's just that's if I'm not thinking and I'm on a phone call, that's what's coming out of my hand.
It's just a really natural, it's just an appealing design, and
Yeah.
you keep fine-tuning it and like I don't know, I would buy you have very t-shirt ready natural design sensibilities, as I'm sure like a lot of people know that, well, the ones who ripped off that Canada thing you did with
Oh yeah,
the
that's
beaver
an everyday battle for me.
the
Every day
super
I get sent new rip-offs of that, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
Oh, what is that? What is
I did this crest, it's a Canadian crest, as like just a plate. Like, I was playing around one night in my apartment. I was drawing, this was like over a decade ago when I lived in Canada, and I was just drawing a crest. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny to design like in a style that looks somewhat regal and old-fashioned, but there's a beaver riding a goose that's screaming. And I just drew, and it became like a very viral image for Canadians. And people get it tattooed on themselves all the time. They,
Wow,
you'd
that's
rec
so
you
crazy.
might recognize it, V. If you see, you'd be like, oh, I saw that
You
on
might have
like
seen it. I literally
some
just Googled it and I just saw
Instagram that
it.
rips off art. Like, I see it pop up
It
sometimes, and
pops
it's
up
like
all
not
the
your account,
time.
and it's like not you. I'm
And
like, oh.
that might be my thing. That might be all I ever do that's memorable. Which is fine. Which is fine. But like, that thing, it's funny when something you make, well, I think it just makes sense, right? It's something you make that's pleasurable to you. You think it's funny, and it just hits a chord, and you never know when that's going to be the thing, you know? Yeah, there it
Yeah.
is.
There it is. That's so funny.
And there it
That's.
is, a rodent screaming. Like I said, I like to draw rodents screaming. Oh
Yeah,
man.
I
So
know
that
that.
image has been like duplicated. People use it for like teams, and I get emails all the time like, is it cool if I get this tattooed on my body? I'm like, yeah, I'll go for it. Like, people just really responded to it,
Just
which
give
is
me
great.
some residuals on your skin. Like, I don't
Yeah,
know.
$10 a tattoo. I don't know.
Sometimes that's what I've started doing though, like, because I had like a bunch of inks that people are like, I love your inks, can they get it tattooed? And I'm like, sure, if you can drop $5 on my online PDF of all the sketches, that would be very much appreciated. And sometimes they do,
Yeah, of course.
and it's
Because,
like,
like, most people have the decency to ask, but a lot of people will just take an image and throw it on a t-shirt and start selling them on
that
Redbubble or
sucks,
something.
because I feel like when it's a tattoo, it's like, well, you
It's
would want to
different.
get, yeah, you would want to get paid just for, because you a little bit, but it's like, okay, you're just going to wear it all the time. Like, you're not like, making money off of it. But somebody who makes
Yeah.
a t-shirt from it, it's kind of like, come on, bro. It's like,
That's a different beast to me. Because I sell the t-shirts already myself. So then when they're selling them, those are sales I'm not getting. And that pisses me off. And
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense.
it's
Because
my art, you know? Like, it's just very
exactly.
personal to me. So it's very, it's not nice.
Yeah,
Not
there's
cool.
not cool.
Not cool,
Oh,
bro. Not cool, bro, on the internet selling my drawings.
It's a compliment, whatever.
You should be grateful. You should be grateful.
You're welcome, frankly.
Yeah.
I feel like we've kind of, I'm just going to give a quick shout out to people who I feel like we've already answered their questions, but I just want to shout out just because I really appreciate them asking questions. So at Cirrus Draws on Instagram, thank you so much for your question. And from at is Spatial Raptor on Instagram, we have your art is so dynamic and fun. What are your top five influences? Ooh. Yes, specifically top five. Also, top no takesies, backsies.
Oh my God. Wow, this person is intense.
A lot of pressure.
Very intense.
All right, let me start off with my fingers ready. Okay, number one, 1930s, 40s Disney. 1930s, 40s, Warner Brothers, Max Fleischer. Mm-hmm. I'm very careful because I can't take anything back.
Yeah.
How many are left?
Oh,
two.
Hanna-Barbera.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
For just like shapes and cool colors and funny, weird animals. And, oh, I guess like, I don't know if this would be a different genre, but I said 30s, 40s Disney, but like also like 90s Disney was like a big influence in me as an artist growing up. Because, like, The Little Mermaid was, like, one of my favorite movies as a kid. But then I also, like, really, like, things like Sanrio and, like, a lot of Japanese stuff really kind of design-wise, I take a lot from that stuff, too. So that's actually six, technically, but...
Two of those are, like, almost the same, right? Like, Disney, yeah. 30s, yeah. Yeah.
But that's a good question.
Wow, that's really great. And I like to hear six of them. I like that you brought up the scenario because I feel like you had all like very
animation
references. Yeah. So Sanrio was kind of like, oh, that's fun. And I see that too.
The more I think about it, the more comics that I loved as a kid and like, you know, there's a million other things. I think those are the main ones that made me go, oh my God, design wise or the way they moved. I was like, I love the way this looks. Those were the main ones for sure.
That is a tough question. Oh, go on.
Oh yeah. I'm just kind of like, I'm like, go and draw them. No, yeah, there's a ton of them. Really cool. From at Zach Cartoonist. How do you push your drawings to stay loose, but also solid? And how do you emulate your artists while developing your own drawing style? That's really interesting.
Oh, I know Zach. Hi, Zach. Like, it's hard to describe your process because you just do it. I think it's a matter, like, when I'm drawing, I always just, you go with feeling first. Like, go with the flow, draw the expression, and, like, let the structure part be, like, thought number two. Like, go with the feeling and then go back and erase and put structure in after. I think that's the best way to do it. And eventually you will get the structure with the feeling. It takes a long time though, because I remember always getting the feeling, but then it would never look quite right, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And then but now I feel like more than ever as I'm maturing every year, like I just feel like I'm getting more and more to that point where like I can draw things that I can see right in my head a lot better. Whereas before it was more of like, more molding on the paper and erasing and figuring it out but feeling should always be the first thing, like, you know, throw in those lines, throw in those shapes to get the feeling first and then figure out the details later and structure.
I love that answer. Yeah,
it's actually, yeah, I do too actually, because I feel like I think about that sometimes like consciously, like, and I have to remember that like the energy that you put down and then the rest is just like the, you know, necessary dressing, I guess, to finish the big potato that is your drawing.
Yeah. We had a great question from Art of Harvey, but we kind of like covered it in previously in the episode. Just wanted to say thanks for your question. Ooh, from at Castle Tunes. Hi, Ari.
Oh,
hey, Ari.
Ari.
First off, big fan. He said he's a big fan. When drawing something,
the best.
Yeah, he's great. He was on the
we
podcast.
We shared an office together for like, I don't know, a couple of years.
Oh, he's so funny. He's he co-hosted one episode, and if anybody wants to like know more about Ari, look him up on the on the creative block.
Yeah, Ari's super talented. He's a great board artist.
So he asked, when drawing something original, what is your thought process and what do you prioritize? So I guess the difference here is that he's asking about something original.
Well, kind of like what I said, I think when you're drawing something original, what do you prioritize? Prioritize the concept and the feeling. I don't know. Like, just do it. Just do it, Ari.
Do it. God, Ari.
It's like it's hard to like put into words drawing something, like a concept, you know? You just sort of do what you feel is right for the drawing. But what was his question, though? Was it more like process or...
Yeah, I think what's your thought process and what do you prioritize? Because I think like I could see that question as in terms like when you're drawing something original, like maybe like for example, like do you think about characters or do you kind of like look at your lines or like do you like get inspiration from somewhere?
I think it's always like it's because if I'm drawing a character, I guess it's always the character's intention. Like, what is this character doing? What do they want? What's their feeling here? Just it's all emotion, really. I guess, yeah.
I love that it sounds like your process and your work generally is like very emotion driven. You're kind of going
would
with
say
the gut.
So.
Yeah.
I'm very emotional.
That resonates though, you know? People, because you can't really bullshit that because it's real. And then it like is
Well, it has
infectious.
A spark to it, you know? Like when you
I'm
see
drawn
it in
to
a
that
drawing.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's
well, your
cool.
drawings are like that too, Carl. Like you're like, that's what I mean. When you look at them, you feel like, ooh, there's something in that eye that's a little too close to reality.
I don't know.
You know, like you just kind of capture that energy too.
It's that life, I guess. I don't know, like because I guess I don't know when we were, well, it sounds like you have a similar upbringing, the way like it was like learning the fundamentals and how to animate, really, because like that was sort of what I thought I would like do was animate, and then it went into story kind of just because it is everything. But I guess because of that, like you know, you get like maybe a little more nuanced idea of sort of like what reaction or acting would be that isn't just sort of like paint by numbers, but like because you're thinking about something and you're like doing a little performance, I guess, with a drawing, or it helps to have. And nowadays it's hard for, like, I'll just draw like fat mammals and garbage unless I like realize, like you know, or a rodents, like you know, unless I have an idea, it's like, oh, that's right, I guess, like I have to convey a thought. But like then when there is a thought, like you build the performance around the energy that is like your voice as an artist, I guess.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like sometimes I feel like, how many times am I gonna draw the same squirrel, you know? Like, but it sometimes you just have to just do it. Just draw that squirrel, because that's who you are, you know. If you're doing it, it means you like it and you can't abandon it. You just gotta keep doing it. See what happens.
I mean, the thing is, like, that squirrel of yours, I would say it's sort of, like, become almost, like, this refined, like, essence that it very much is kind of, like, I don't know, like, who knows? Maybe there's, like, a little vehicle for that guy if you haven't already done...
Well,
I mean,
I'm pitching a show right now. Well, like, it's in... Well, I shouldn't say pitching. We are developed... We have it developed. We're kind of just waiting for, like, the last... okay, go do it, but it's all rodents and it's all musical. It's very
ooh,
wild.
I look up like my headphones look like a rodent.
So it's like a Canadian production. My friend Juan, he runs he was part of Copernicus Studios and now he's doing his own thing. We teamed up and he's really good at getting Canadian funding money, and they were doing like women ran production ideas, whatever, like they wanted to sponsor like a woman creator, and he was like, I'll get us this money, you bring the idea, let's develop. And then this is over the pandemic, so it's been years that I've been working on this thing and trying to get it out, but hopefully, cross your fingers, it'll be out there, and then there will be crazy rodents on television.
Awesome.
Screaming.
It's
funny. That's my goal. I mean, I really hope this you know, like you have an idea and you go, if this isn't it, then what is for me? That's my show, the one that I'm on now that I'm trying to get off the ground. It's just like
rodents.
I'm excited in my chest just you describing that. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's, oh man, I hope
and
that.
And if it is something, I really would love for you to work on it, Carl, because I know you like rodents. Well, and I will. If you like rodents, come aboard.
That's so funny. I was on the podcast earlier and I was telling my friend Sam's doing this podcast and I was telling her like, yeah, I spent my entire childhood pretending I was a squirrel. So,
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I climbed a lot of trees.
So I guess that fits the bill.
Yeah. I rescued a baby squirrel a couple weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. It was so funny. I was on the phone with my boyfriend, David, and I was like, we're just talking, blah, 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 and I'm walking my dog. And then all of a sudden I go, David, call you back. There's a squirrel on the ground. Click. And he was just like, what? Yeah. And then I just literally, like, had a ball cap on, wrapped it around the squirrel, brought it home, force-fed it some water with salt and sugar, and it was very close to death. And then it came around, and I ended up leaving it with this woman who had 13 squirrels. And she had like a sanctuary out in, I was going to say Casablanca, but that's not where I brought him. It was, where did the Kardashians live? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Why can't I think of it?
Because it's not a neighborhood that people talk a lot about.
It's not a neighborhood for my class.
Oh my God. And I just listened to.
It's like 40 minutes from here.
This happened the other week. Like you just like
Calabasas.
Yeah, she was out in Calabasas, and I left her the squirrel. And she looked at it. She's like, fill out this form. And she grabbed the squirrel. She's like, it's a male. Thank you for rescuing him. He will be great here. And then she like went into her house and closed the door. I was like, I was out on her front porch, like still signing the paper. It was crazy, but I'm glad I saved him. Like he was so cute.
That's awesome, and. I don't know. I feel like, yeah, would you say that, well, I guess, like, are you, like, do you have a certain fit, like, the fact that it was a squirrel, like, is that, like, I don't know, spiritually relevant to you? Like,
well, it's kind of my animal, you know? I love squirrels. So, when I saw that little lifeless body on the pavement,
you hesitate.
Bet your ass I ran over there with my ball cap. Scooped it up. Yeah.
I thought you were describing your origin story from when you were a kid, but no, this like just happened. So like,
no, this
you
was
were the
like a week or two ago. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah. Funny.
Super cute.
They are a little, I mean, they're, we have, I mean, there's one that keeps coming to our balcony to try to bury nuts in like Megan's flower pot and he rips everything up and it's a little annoying, but gosh, they share our yellow belly little like friends. I don't
they
know.
The squirrels are so out here, cute.
They're vibrant as hell too. They look like you're drawing like in Florida. Those squirrels are so like mangy and gray and covered in like just moss and flea bites. But out here, they're so buttery and oh, look at that friend.
That was my baby for a bit.
Oh my God, he's so cute.
Yeah, and when they're babies, they're just not afraid of people, so they're like they like you a lot. It's weird.
You can put them in a hat. You can feed them. Whatever that, what did you say? You fed them like sugar and salt.
Well, I gave them sugar and salt water. It's like a homemade homemade Pedialyte, I guess. And then I gave them like, you know, some cashews after that.
Did you like use an eyedropper or like a little baby bottle?
An eyedropper.
Riker's old bottle. Like you got it from like the basement.
No, I just used an eyedropper that I had.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised by this at all, but it is very, it's just like, of course that would happen and that would be a thing. It's good.
Yeah, I guess I'm always looking for it. I don't know. But
that's so funny. I was like watching a lot of like rescue cat videos and like there was a lady who like is like really big in the kitten rescue and she said that she was like the moment she started kind of like caring about it, she would see like little like abandoned cats everywhere.
Wow. Yeah, so maybe I'll see more. I hope so. I don't mind.
We had some great Twitter questions from at Mooncat445 and from at DCAU Resource. Might not have time to get to these questions, but thank you so much for asking. And from YouTube at Pineapple Bank 8950 asks, I've been a big fan of Jess's illustrations on Instagram and the Looney Tunes show. I wanted to ask how she has the time and energy to make all these digital drawings while still working at the same time.
Oh, well, you know, I think sometimes it looks like I'm doing stuff all the time, but I'm really not. Just because they're all, it's all like gathered over like a long period of time. You know, I think I'm lucky my day job doesn't take up all my hours. It's a very manageable job hour-wise. So I do have time to like goof around a bit and draw my own stuff and develop my own stuff. It's also prioritizing, you know, like sometimes I'll just say, you know, tonight I'm just devoting to this and I just work on like a development project. A lot of my work is actually done on my lap on my iPad while I watch a movie, you know? Like I don't really watch movies that often without drawing at the same time because I think it almost sometimes feels like not that I'm wasting time, but I'm like, I could be doing something else at the same time, you know? Because I do love drawing. I find it really relaxing, especially when you're drawing your own thing. But, you know, and it's so funny. They're like, how do you do it? It's like, I actually feel like I look at other people and say, how do you do it? Maybe we're all just looking at other people and saying, how do you do it? Because I feel like I don't have enough time to draw my own stuff or
I was
develop
about
my
to
own thing.
say, like, how can you draw and also watch a movie? I like can't if I'm if there's a visual thing, like I really
Well, I get
can't,
sucked
like
in here and there, but you know, I don't know.
no.
It depends what it is. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just right now I have time to a degree because my day job is so manageable, but I know that every production's so different, so sometimes your day job can just eat out all the hours of your day. But right now
Yeah.
I'm lucky where I have a bit more bandwidth to do my own stuff on the side.
Yeah. That's a great answer. I want to give a quick shout out to Angel Pearson's 696 and James Gemstone Butterfly. Thanks for your questions, you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, we haven't gone to the heart of this show, which is creative block.
Oh, yeah.
And we ask that to all of our guests, and it's always like really great to hear all the different answers because everybody's got like a different way to like approach it. And so do you experience creative block? And if you do, what does it feel like and how do you deal with
Yeah,
it?
for me, my creative block doesn't, it's not a visual thing. It's not when with drawing. For me, it's story. My first superpower is not even close to writing. I'm really good at concepts. I'm really good at feeling. I'm really good at someone telling me a concept and I can create it and I can draw it all out. But when it comes to like mechanics of stories, I get so blocked and stuck where I just can't even, ideas will just have to pause because I don't even know where to go from where I am. It just feels like too big of a problem. And then I like back off and then I just stop thinking about it. And I had one show in development, a Nick, that, you know, they even teamed me up with some writers and they were helping me out. And I just felt like, you know, there was all these questions that kept revealing themselves and it just felt too big for me on my own. And the other day I just thought, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna take the concept that I love from this development and I'm just gonna start doing a graphic novel page by page. Just as an exercise, because if that's how I work and I'm visual and the writing is the tricky part, why don't I just start it with each panel and just kind of like let it unfold and you know, I can maneuver things here and there, but that might be the best option because I felt so blocked with this one story. I think it's just figuring out, you know, there's just, it's hard when you're not, I never took any training for writing. I'm not a natural like writer. So like when I have to like figure out like character dynamics and how these characters work together and how the story's going to develop from there and then how's it going to change them and how's this going to tie back? Like some I find that very overwhelming and a little bit too almost detailed in a way my brain doesn't really work. So I think for me, I need to find like a good creative partner, to be honest, like someone who's a really talented writer that's interested in the same types of things I am, and then we could team up. Like I think that would be ideal. I think creative blocks are sometimes just talking to a friend and talking it out too, and you can really figure out stuff really fast, especially story stuff. Just saying it out loud. That's my biggest issues with creativity. I find the story can really like just stump me, and then I don't know where to go next. And I have some projects that are still in that state. They're waiting to come out of purgatory because I'm still figuring out how to do it. But I think that's normal. I think everyone has a few, you know, brainchilds that are just kind of difficult to figure out.
Yeah, very relatable.
You know, and that's just, I look at it as like, you know, if you have something that is still finding its, you know, it's just like incubating in your mind.
Yeah.
And I am not above recycling things that maybe like didn't work, like the fact, you know, it's like there's still something there, so it's worth revisiting.
Yeah,
especially when you have a little more, I don't know, like not necessarily because you're very experienced already, but like you just like it literally, it's an impossible thing to accept. But well, it's funny actually, it's just time, like,
yeah,
you know, and we never have enough of it, you know, like even this chat will have to, but it's like literally like sometimes like time, like I guess like my brain, I have to like render a thought in some time, and then it'll, clarity will happen in tiny little nothing doses, and then it'll sort of form a picture, but it won't happen right away. It'll like,
yeah, sort it's of like time. Sculpting, yeah. You know, it's kind of all coming together in different layers,
the little protein molecules that are the answer, like really have to like mush together over time, and I can't will it to happen. It's sort of like, so that's why like the whole creative block thing, it's getting an outsider perspective. Or for me, it's like trying to not think about it so that like the computer can do its rendering job and then like the clarity will reveal itself. But I mean, for all the talents and skills that you have, like, you know, like it's, yeah, like it, I mean, there has to be something, you know, like I'm glad.
I think
that,
I just
like,
need a writing partner. I need to find someone somewhere in the industry that wants to like team up and like just play, because
I want to ask you really fast,
what,
when you are looking for a writing partner, or when an exec is like, okay, let's get you a writing partner, and then
and then
comes the time where it's like like auditioning writers, how do you go about that, or like how do you pitch what you're looking for in a part, in a writing partner?
I think it's just a matter of like their personal interests, like what kind of stories do they like, and then what shows have they written on already, and do I think those shows are the sensibility I'm looking for. So it's just a sort of a mix of their portfolio and then just their interest. But then it comes down to like, it's like dating. You meet this person and like you might have the same like, you know, interests and stories, but like maybe you just really as people aren't speaking the same language when you talk. That can be hard, you know. You have to like kind of have a friendship and a similar style of communication, or do you just get each other, you know? It's a bit of all three of those things.
I love that
chemistry. It comes down to chemistry, I guess. Yeah,
and I'm trying to find segue, and this is what I struggle with the most every time, but we'll just kind of wrap it up real fast with no segue because I can't find any right now.
Well, maybe you don't need segues on this show. Maybe that's the charm of it. You're like, we're done,
that's it. No, but that was also great. That was also fun and so insightful, and like your career is so like amazing, and there's so many great things to learn from this episode. So I'm really, really glad that you made the time to come on, and I thought that I'm sure people will really appreciate all the wisdom and also like how you go about your art, like going with emotion first. I feel like we haven't really talked about that on the pod, so that was super cool.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I think this is so fun. Like, I love talking about this stuff that we do because I don't ever really talk about it. I just do it every day and I don't really have the time to talk about it. Or if I do talk with people, it's always about, you know, other things in life, because I feel like, you know, it's just, it's really cool to talk shop with you guys, or as you would call it, I guess, talk shop. But it's been really fun. Thanks for having me. Like, this is really, really cool. I love what you guys are doing. This is a really, really like great concept for a podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. And you know, well, unfortunately, we're gonna have to wrap it up, but you know, that's the end of this creative block. And Jess, thank you so much for being our guest and sharing your story.
My pleasure.
Oh, and thanks to our listeners. Follow us on social media at Creative Block, where we ask for drawing prompts and questions to ask our guests. And a huge thank you to our editor, Clements, for editing the podcast. And thanks, Marco, for helping us produce the show.
And if you love our show, you can support us on Patreon. Becoming a patron gets you early access to interviews and access to our Discord community. We're working on some fun little things, like sometimes deleted clips that will be nowhere else than on the Patreon. Another great way you can support us is to just share and like and talk to your buddies about what we're doing. Getting more ears on the podcast goes a really long way, so we really appreciate your support that way. Click the link in the description of this episode. I have been your host, V.
And I was Carl. Keep being creative, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Bye!
Bye!
Bye.